I'm Tom Roy with WGXC, and you're listening to the Congressional Report for New York's 19th District for news about Representative John Faso, current Republican from Kinderhook who holds the position, and Antonio Delgado, the congressperson-elect. Currently, the 538.com website reports that Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 89.2% of the time, the same as before the election.
Jimmy Valkin reports in the Wall Street Journal that Representative John Faso blames Democrats and the media for his election loss November 6 to Antonio Delgado. He said the media coverage of his campaign was, and I quote, grotesquely biased, end quote. That was an apparent reference to many people calling ads run on his behalf by national Republican groups racist, which one local radio station pulls for that reason. While Faso's blaming of the media may sound like he was in step with Donald Trump, the president criticized Faso days after endorsing him on Twitter. Faso was one of eight Republicans who lost that the president blamed for not embracing his message. Faso said Trump was, and I quote, a big factor in generating the Democratic turnout, so I don't know that being more supportive in a public way would have changed the outcome in any way. It probably would have made it worse, end quote. Read the full story in the Wall Street Journal.
On November 14th, Faso voted for H.R. 6784, the Manage Our Wolves Act, which sounds like a bill everyone can get behind. But House Republicans inserted a line in the bill declaring, quote, the provisions of Section 7 of the War Powers Resolution shall not apply to House Concurrent Resolution 138, unquote. That effectively keeps American military forces in Yemen, even though that has not been authorized by Congress pursuant to the War Powers Resolution. So instead of a bill to protect wolves, this was a bill to keep the U.S. involved in Saudi Arabia's war with Yemen, where many war atrocities have occurred. The bill passed 201 to 187, with only six Democrats voting for it and 15 Republicans, but not John Faso, voting against. Since the election, Faso has been mostly silent on Twitter and his own website. Delgado has been posting photos from Washington, D.C., where he has been attending orientations and meeting other representatives. Faso did give one national interview this week with Bloomberg TV, where he again blamed Democrats and the media for his electoral loss.
Well, I guess the most direct question is the president right? Would you have won if you had embraced him more closely?
Actually, I don't think so. Our district is very politically divided, and since I was elected and the president was elected in 2016, the Democratic base has been truly energized, and we saw this throughout the last 2 years. So I've handled the issue of supportive of the president on this way. I've said I'll support him when I agree with him, and most of the time I did agree with him on policies, and I will not support him when I disagree with him. And that's clearly the case, and I think that's what my constituents expected me to do.
So what lessons do you think we should take, all of us, and particularly Republicans, from this midterm election, and particularly for people like you who come from blue states, who come from districts that might be more divided, they're not Trump base, as it were. What is the route for those people to get to Congress, to get to the Senate, given President Trump's leadership?
Well, I think you have to carve out your own identity, and you certainly have to have a clear, consistent philosophy that will appeal to swing voters and voters in blue states like New York. I think it's clear the president supported candidates in Indiana, Tennessee, North Dakota, for instance, and they did very well. But that is not the environment that those of us who run in New York or California or New Jersey, for instance, face. So I think we have to recognize the Republican Party needs to be a big tent, and we have to be accommodating to the local concerns and local interests that exist in those states, especially if you want to win. We can't just be a party that is closeted into certain narrow confines, either ideologically or politically around the country. That's a prescription for losing.
President Trump doesn't come across usually as a big tent kind of guy, if I can say that. He seems to be more somebody who excludes rather than includes. Is he really controlling? Is he leading the Republican Party at this point? When he first was elected, people said, not really. He's not even really quite a Republican. He was a Democrat for many years. But is he really solidifying his support within the Republican Party?
Well, I think there's no doubt the president has strong support in the Republican Party. And I've been pleased to support him on regulatory changes, on things like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, on ending the Iran deal. on standing up for the country to get our NATO allies to finally bear their share of defense costs in NATO. I'm all for the president. The president did a great job on renegotiating the NAFTA agreement that's helping our upstate dairy farmers. So there are many areas where I'm in agreement with the president. I think that what we have to do is recognize that the tone sometimes is going to turn off some voters. And if we're going to win in 2020, we've got to address that.
So give some advice to people who are left behind in Congress after you leave. You've been there. You've been part of the decision-making, part of the legislating. What would you advise your fellow Republicans in the House in terms of working with Democrats? Are there some areas that you could see people coming together and moving legislation forward that the president would sign?
I do think so. I think that I was a member of the Problem Solvers Group. It's a bipartisan group of Democrats and Republicans in the House. We set forth some constructive approaches on how to fix the mess that's the Affordable Care Act and try to address some of the issues of premiums and deductibles being way too high. I think that's one area. And I also think infrastructure still remains an area where you can find some common ground with Democrats and Republicans. It's pretty clear the Democrats are going to come in. I expect they'll overreach. Their progressive left base in the party wants things that, frankly, are not going to be good for the country, single-payer system, for instance. So I think we have to address, find areas where we can come together as Democrats and Republicans and agree it's not going to be my problem next year.
It won't be your problem. But you have the wisdom maybe we could help people. And looking backwards, do you think the Republicans maybe overreached when it came to repealing the Affordable Care Act? That was a big issue. You took a couple of runs at it, and it really put it on the agenda in a way that I think may have made some voters across the country concerned about their health care.
Well, I think we clearly didn't sell the plan to people in an effective fashion. And because of our Freedom Caucus in the House, we wound up reopening this argument over pre-existing conditions, which should never have been opened. In fact, our bill, I believe, protected everyone with pre-existing conditions, but the Democrats made it an effective issue to try to exploit that weakness that we had. And that was done, frankly, to try to appease the right wing and the Republican Party in the House, the so-called Freedom Caucus, to get their votes to pass that bill. And candidly, many of them didn't even vote for the bill. So I think that my recommendation is that people in our conference have to recognize that not everyone is coming from a district in Alabama or Texas or Utah, and we've got to have a set of policies that you can sell broadly in the country, especially if you want to win in places like New York and California and New Jersey, etc.